Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January the 21st, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, David. And tonight we have another fast hour of information and news of interest to the veterans. But before jumping into our show, I'd like to once again acknowledge two sponsors of ours, Joyce and Joe Civaroli, whose financial contribution helps us provide this weekly show for the benefit of veterans and their families across the country. Tonight we have a special guest, Lauren Price of the group called Veteran Warriors. She's going to discuss the issues of toxic contamination from open-air burn pits used by the military in Iraq and Afghanistan during those wars, and how so many veterans have been affected with cancer and other various illnesses. First, though, I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show that welcomes everybody, that your views, your comments, your questions. If you're a veteran and there's something about tonight's show, especially dealing with toxic contamination, give us a call. And that number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Hope to hear from some people out there. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Let me introduce our special guest. Lauren Price is the founder of Veteran Warriors, a national veterans advocacy group, and she has led that organization since its creation in 2009. She has testified before Congress on veteran issues. As far as career training and experience, she graduated from Omega Institute in New Jersey with paralegal certification in 1987. She also has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice with a minor in psychology from St. Leo University. She has nearly two decades of experience in the legal profession, and of particular significance to our discussion tonight on this show, she served in the United States Navy for a decade between January 2005 and January 2015, including serving for more than a year in Iraq as a convoy driver as well as a public affairs officer in Baghdad. She also served as the Intel and Logistics Lead Petty Officer at the Defense Logistics Agency, U.S. Central Command. She co-founded a veterans group called Veteran Warriors with her husband, Jim Price, who is a retired Navy senior chief. Military service is a proud tradition in her family, with four of her five sons having served in the military as well. She is our guest tonight on the Veterans News Hour to talk about some issues of importance to many veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. So without further ado, I welcome Lauren Price to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, Lauren?
I'm just great. Thank you so much for having me, David and Rick.
Well, we're pleased that you can join us. We have lots to talk about, but for the benefit of our listeners, if you could begin by talking about your experience serving in the Navy, including more than a year in Iraq. What was that like? What was your own personal experience with the open burn pits?
Well, during my tour in Iraq, like everybody, it had a lot of hats to wear, and I spent a good chunk of my downtime not on the road, actually working directly with KBR and the mayor's cell and dealing with the burn pits one-on-one, so to speak, actually taking things to the pits to be dumped and wide open. Back your truck up, dump your stuff out, whatever it is. They'd kind of look over the side of it and see if there was anything worth keeping. And it wasn't, they weren't separating it for what was contaminated or anything else. They just wanted to see if it was anything worth poaching and point you to where they'd want you to dump it. And that was it.
What were these open burn pits like? Like, how large were they? Were they burning continuously, like 24 hours a day? Can you give us examples of what kinds of waste were burned in the pits? What did they use to incinerate the waste, those kinds of things?
Well, we had I was stationed on Camp Liberty, which is part of Victory Base Complex. It was a 40-square-mile conglomeration of FOBs that had finally, we owned enough of the real estate that we could secure them. But as a convoy driver, I also traveled over almost the whole eastern third of Iraq. And I'd been to I've lost track of how many FOBs and COPs, which are combat outposts, and every one of them have their own burn pit. And I've seen them as small as, like, the one in Yusufiya was about the width of three T-walls wide, which is about the size of a full-size sofa. So about three of those end-to-end, and it was probably about 30 feet deep. The one that was at Camp Liberty, which served also Camp Victory, I couldn't see the other side of it, and you couldn't drive around it. It was just that big, and it looked like the meteor crater that's out in Arizona. It was that deep, and it burned 24/7, and I've actually seen them do this, where they had a pump truck that had jet fuel in it, JP-8. And if they had sections of it that would die down or start to go out because it was too dense, you know, mattresses and so much trash that there was no oxygen under it, they'd just spray it and then ignite it again. And I've personally seen vehicle parts. And the thing about the vehicle parts is every piece of military equipment is painted with what's called kark paint. It's corrosive-resistant paint that during the first Gulf War, the Army discovered that when you light it on fire or weld it or ignite it in any way, it becomes a super carcinogen. It's like guaranteed to give you cancer.
Wow.
That, and then there's, you know, batteries that are no good, and I mean vehicle batteries and computer batteries, and then you have styrofoam and plastic water bottles and every other kind of household trash. And then, and yes, to dispel the rumors, yes, there was medical waste, but that's actually an accepted form of disposing of medical waste. It's not an acceptable form of disposal for solvents and carcinogenic paint and things like this. And all of those things, including tires, everything was burned in there. It was our only form of waste disposal.
Wow. Now, you described one of the pits as being so large you really couldn't see the other side. You couldn't drive around it. I'd read that some of the burn pits were as large as 10 acres. Does that sound about right? And
yeah.
Can you tell us what year were you over there?
I got there in February of 07 and left at the end of March of 08.
So the burn pits were active in that time frame, including...
Everywhere. Every single FOB had a burn pit. The combat outposts, which are really small, in some cases only had, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 service members there, may or may not have one, but every FOB had one because that's how we disposed of waste.
Okay, so these forward operating bases, how many of them would you personally visit? So when you say you'd see these open burn pits at practically all of them, how many are you talking about roughly?
I don't know. Let's get back to that because I actually am sitting in front of my computer and I'm going to pull it up and give you a count because I have the list of all the places I've been.
Oh, I didn't need an exact number, but just even a ballpark. I'm just trying to give our listeners
40.
I see. Okay, very extensive.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, can you tell us, if you wish to do so, your own personal struggles with war-related and burn pit-related disabilities?
Well, I was an athlete before I went. The day before I left for Iraq, I did my PT test. I completed my run in 12 minutes, 20 seconds at 42 years old. And when I came back, I could no longer climb a flight of stairs without getting winded. I have some other injuries that are from, they're stress injuries from driving. I actually destroyed my hands, all the bones in my hands. I had to have partial amputation. But I also couldn't run anymore. I was falling out of command runs. And before I left, I was a runner. I ran 5 to 6 days a week and on an average of 5 miles a day. I come back, I can't climb a flight of stairs, I can't run, I literally couldn't even walk my dog. And I finally, it took about 6 months to convince the command I was at Central Command, but I wasn't attached to anybody. I wasn't in a regular Navy command. So I had to convince this Air Force doctor that I couldn't breathe. I was getting sicker. And they had stopped using specialists in the military facilities there, so they sent me out in town. And the doctor that I saw told me he had about 75 other patients who were all soldiers who had just come back, all of us presenting with the same symptoms. By October of that year, he ended up deciding to do a lung biopsy because medication wasn't working. The results of the lung biopsy is I have constrictive bronchiolitis. It's got very little known about it. It was first discovered in the 70s, and at that time it was 100% fatal with a lifespan of 5 to 7 years from when you contracted it. There's about 1,000 of us that I know, a lot of them personally, who also have this. And we've exceeded the lifespan, and the general consensus amongst us lay people is that essentially it's we have different medications now that they're treating our symptoms with.
I see.
And and we also aren't still being exposed, and we're all retired now because of it, because we can't work. So we're not as stressed out, physically stressed. So we're surviving a little bit longer, but we are all deteriorating. I've lost track of how many friends I've lost from this disease and other like rare cancers, things like that.
I see. Now, in your work on behalf of veterans who have been sickened by exposure to these toxic burn pits, what can you tell us? What have you learned as far as what the doctors have said? You said you went to an outside doctor, meaning a non-military doctor. What can you share with us about the connection that they've made between the toxins and this constrictive bronchiolitis and other respiratory and other cancers?
There's essentially about 3 doctors in the nation that have been studying these, not just these diseases, but these symptoms. And people coming back and being completely undiagnosable sick. You have no idea why they're sick. Some of the things that are supposed to be genetically passed on, they're getting them and no one has a history in their family, things like this. These 3 doctors, there's one in New York, Dr. Anthony Zima at Stony Brook Medical Center. There's Dr. Robert Miller at Vanderbilt in Nashville. And then there's Dr. Cecile Rose at Jewish National. Each of them has been studying all of these things and very specifically looking at the cause. And the biggest cause that they've discovered through clinical research, not just treating patients, these people are also clinical researchers. They've discovered that we have heavy particulate matter in the bottom of our lungs. We have heavy metal concentrations that far exceed what people here in the U.S. have. We have rare things that are showing up that shouldn't be showing up, even in other service members who served side by side with us. My husband served side by side with me, and he's not sick. So this is the thing that they're looking at. They're also looking at whether there's genetic component that would make you more susceptible. I have a friend that got sick the same time. He was in Balad while I was in Baghdad. And he'd never smoked in his life. He was healthy all his life. And he has the exact same disease with the same progressions I have. So there's not a lot of logic behind it, but there's a lot of good science that we now have 15 years later, 10 years for me, but 15 years since they really started the research. And we've got some real good, solid research behind us now. We've developed legislation. Right now there's two separate bills in Congress, and I want to be very specific about them for people.
Yes.
Our bill, Veteran Warriors, spent 10 years doing this research, and we are now collaborating with a research organization called Hunter 7. Hunter 7 isn't exclusively, that's all they do is clinical research. And they have been researching this and have all of DOD research and air quality testing going back to 2003 to prove that this is how we got sick. This legislation that we have, which is H.R. 6582, it's called Protections for Veterans Exposed to Burn Pits. There are 14 specific mandates in there, 14 specific ones that address our illnesses, that address the way that we've been dealt with by the Department of Veterans Affairs when we come home. And some people come home and they're brought out of theater and they're sick. And we're still at war. We're still fighting over there. And we are still bringing soldiers home that are coming home sick. But they're still to this day being denied. Our mandates specifically addressed DOD policy that's been in existence for 10 years, VA policy that's been in existence for 9.5 years, and forced them to acknowledge empirical science that the EPA and CDC, WHO and NIM and NAM and everybody, alphabet soup, you know, there's 50 years of empirical research out there that says if secondhand smoke will kill you, breathing gasoline fumes will kill you. Can't burn your household trash in your backyard. That'll make people sick.
Right.
So our mandates address those things. And it was written very, very carefully to not turn this into another Agent Orange situation. That there's going to be a separate committee set aside that is not controlled by the Department of Veterans Affairs or the DOD that answers solely to Congress about how fast they're doing it. It's the timeline in it is incredibly fast. It's 90 days tops for everything to get moving and start taking care of people.
Lauren, if I could just ask you about one thing. You just mentioned a moment ago,
sure,
Agent Orange. And I know many of our longtime listeners know we've talked about Agent Orange and the use of Agent Orange in Vietnam and how the VA now has, by regulation, for veterans that are seeking disability compensation because of exposure to Agent Orange, the VA actually has a list, which has grown over the years, of various cancers and other illnesses that if a veteran contracts one of those and served in Vietnam, that there's a rebuttal presumption that there's that connection, and the VA will compensate that veteran. Now, how can we, what can you tell us about any efforts to do something similar to make it easier for veterans who are suffering like you are from respiratory or other illnesses that there's reason to think that it was due to exposure to these chemicals? What's the situation with any proposed legislation that might provide a similar list like there is with Agent Orange?
Well, that's the... We attacked this from learning the lessons that our brothers and sisters that served in Vietnam went through. And the biggest lesson we learned was we're not leaving anything up to the VA. So the first thing that's going to happen under our legislation, and that's predominantly what this bill is to do, is to set up presumptive status for those veterans who were exposed and who do contract these illnesses and rare cancers and things like this. But we're not leaving it to the VA to make those decisions and to come up with this incredibly narrow list of, you know, they have three diseases to start with, and maybe in 10 years they'll add two more. No, we're going to have, there's going to be a separate advisory committee set up within 60 days of a bill being signed into law that will be staffed by people that are from the community of toxic chemical research. people like this, the people that work for Hunter 7, those kinds of people, these researchers that know what to look for, they know what these diseases are, they know what these chemicals are that do these diseases. And that committee will be staffed to create the list, and they will have 90 days to create the list. And that is the key piece, is because the VA will have zero control over it. And just for clarification for everybody, one of the key pieces that was written into this legislation is no one that is eligible for burn pit presumptive status can sit on this committee. And no one who's a federal employee can sit on this committee, meaning VA employees are going to be automatically banned from being able to sit this committee. So it will not be the Research Advisory Committee that was hobbled 8 years ago. This will be a completely different ballgame. And that is one of the key pieces, because we looked at what they've done since the NEMR decision went through. And, you know, randomly they'll pop up and say, the VA pop up and say, well, we'll get two more. Oh, here's these little tiny idiosyncratic, and, you know, like less than 100,000 people in the nation have gotten this disease, but we'll add that to the presumptive. Here's the thing. There are so many chemicals and chemical groupings that are found in the soil and in the air in Iraq and Afghanistan that we cannot isolate it to a short list. To give you an example, butadiene. You won't be able to forget it after tonight. Butadiene is the gas that's emitted when tires are burned, and you know that smell. It's the most distinctive odor in the world. And yet it will kill you in a matter of hours if the concentration's high enough.
And they were throwing tires into these burn pits, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, Lauren, what's the status of this legislation that you were describing for us, this H.R. 6582?
H.R. 6582, it was submitted in July and by Congressman Bill Ruckus and Congressman Ruiz from California were the two original co-sponsors. We now have, I believe, four more co-sponsors have been added, and it's with the Disability Memorial Affairs Subcommittee, which they're the ones that actually are going to go through and do the markup to put it in committee. The next step for us will be markup, which is where they start having hearings and discussing it and deciding what pieces they want to cut out and what pieces they want to keep. The upside is that this was completely bipartisan from day one, and it took this long to get this because we wanted everybody on board. So markup, we don't anticipate to be that severe.
I see. Now with the new Congress just taking office earlier this month, January 2019, with the House now controlled by the Democrats, including the committees, do you see any change, any projection for this legislation now at the new Congress?
Well, the one thing I will tell you is many of the members on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs are not freshman congressmen and women. So we've worked with a lot of them in the past, and we know what their ideals are and what their path is that they want to take. And with the new chairman, Congressman Takano, we're very confident. This is something that he wants to see move forward. He made that very clear during the burn pit hearing back in June. He was just borderline screaming. He's usually a very calm person, and he was borderline screaming. He was so angry at the responses he was getting from the VA and the fact that the DOD didn't even bother to show up. So we're confident that this is going to not have an incredibly difficult road through the House, and we know that it will have a good road in the Senate. We're also looking to do a companion bill in the Senate to make it a little smoother sailing.
I see.
And part of that process is going to be we're holding an informational/educational conference in April in Washington to do two things. One is to educate anybody that wants to come and not just to learn more about burn pits and exposures and things like this, but also so that we can educate these legislators, especially the freshmen, so that they truly understand what our bill is looking for, because one of the big questions is going to be cost. Well, the VA freely admits now there's about 500,000 of us that they know for a fact are eligible to have been on this burn pit registry, of which I was one of the beta testers on. And I was part of the group that got that done. The problem with it is we told them that the questions were no good. They were completely poorly designed. So right now we have about 160,000 people that are actually registered. There's about 180,000 that could never register.
Wow.
That doesn't include people.
Let me ask you, if I could, I'm sorry to interrupt. You mentioned a moment ago about this educational seminar that will be in Washington, D.C. in April of this year. Can you tell us what day in April and where specifically, and how our listeners, if they're interested, can participate, sign up, learn more about this seminar?
Well, absolutely. Right now we are tentatively planning it for April 25th or 26th, depending on the date we're approved for. And unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to release any other information yet because we haven't been approved for the location we're looking for.
Okay.
The one we want, they are a major, major player in the healthcare of the world globally. And they open their facility for conferences like this for free, but only if your conference or seminar has to do with health. And ours does.
Okay.
We're waiting on approval for that. But we do know that's the date we've selected. It will be either the 25th or 26th in Washington. It will be free. The only thing we'll ask people to do is pre-register because it is limited seating. And
well,
I will be sure to get you guys the stuff as soon as the minute we have it locked down.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And maybe you can be back on our show before April. Now, Lauren, aside from the legislation that you mentioned, I know there's been some recent action by this month, by the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court on this issue. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's a thorn in a lot of people's sides. The Supreme Court was asked for a writ of certiorari on, there's hundreds and hundreds of us. One attorney, the attorney that represented myself and others, she had over 800 cases. There are other attorneys that have anywhere from one or two to a few hundred in their office. The cases were all merged for the purposes of the decisions of law. And our case was dismissed last summer by Judge Titus. And Judge Titus, this is his second time at bat dismissing it, and he dismisses it for the argument that it's a political discussion, not a matter of law. And that basically he does not believe that we have any, that KBR has any liability, and that we should be discussing this with Congress, not in court. Our attorneys collectively filed for a writ with SCOTUS, and that was denied. And that is the very last stop, obviously. We can't do anything else. The problem is that their decision came down and said that this was, and I'm quoting here, was a problem for Congress and advocates, meaning me, people like me and my organization, to deal with. It is a question for us to resolve.
And that question
is liability, though.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. So the question here in this case, in these cases, these consolidated cases involving hundreds of veterans, basically deals with, as I understand it, the contract between the Defense Department and KBR, the contractor, which formerly was a division of Halliburton, in which KBR was responsible for operating and making decisions about these open-air burn pits, correct? And
correct.
The question is whether or not KBR violated these contracts. There's evidence
that
they
did. Well, the legal question that was posed was, because the answer was put out several years ago now, KBR, DOD has already stated in their deposition that KBR violated the contract as it was written, because in that contract, they're called log cap contracts. In those log cap contracts, they were required to follow U.S. regulations by the EPA on air emissions and waste disposal and everything else. And basically DOD threw KBR under the bus and said it's their problem. They violated the contract. You got to deal with them. So Ferris Doctrine didn't kick in. Yay. So we were able to move forward from that. But Judge Titus refuses to accept that and refused to acknowledge that KBR violated their contract, thereby violating their responsibility to maintain a safe environment to the best of their abilities for us. Up to and including, and one of the key things that happened, in 2008, I worked with Dan Rather on a story he did that basically blew this wide open. He went into Baghdad, he went to Camp Victory, and I got his producers on the phone after hours and told them how to get to the burn pit so they could take pictures of the burn pit because public relations wouldn't take them there. Then we sat down and did the math. How many water bottles and styrofoam containers got thrown in there during the surge? Because those two things alone, the chemical compositions of those two things alone, would basically kill all of New York if we made them breathe it. So that report went very public, and the Department of Defense issued their new environmental policy, which very specifically laid out what was supposed to be happening on the ground at these fabs. And specifically, here's our leverage now for our legislation, because the Department of Defense in that regulation laid out, using EPA standards at that time for air quality, for a laundry list of toxins, they went through and said that no contractor will exceed this, will allow this to be exceeded, up to and including things like if there was a small fob opened up and it was inhabited for more than 90 days or had more than consistently 100 personnel on the site, they had to use an incinerator. So incinerators were ordered. I handled the RFIs, I handled the RFQs, I handled the contracts, I handled the shipping of those incinerators. We ordered the incinerators, they were sent to Baghdad. The ground commanders in Baghdad turned them away because our administration at the time had said, we're pulling out of Iraq.
Okay, Lauren, let me ask you about those incinerators, because we've been talking so far about open-air burn pits. The military generates an endless amount of trash in their operations. What were these incinerators going to do better or safer or cleaner than these open-air burn pits?
Well, all of the above. The incinerators that we ordered were designed to take the maximum amount of trash, and we had the list. That's the thing. We had the list of what was going to be put into these, and it was going to be the stuff that was already being burned there. The difference is it's not ignited with jet fuel, which is adding another layer of carcinogens to it. It goes through an extensive filtering process before any exhaust is let out. It's the same level of stuff that hospitals use here to incinerate medical waste so that HIV and Ebola and all those other things don't come out in the air.
So these would have been consistent with U.S. EPA standards that the contract between DOD and KBR required, basically. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and they
would have...
Let me just pause here for a moment for the benefit of our listeners. Lauren, those of you who may have tuned in, our special guest tonight is Lauren Price, founder of Veteran Warriors, a national veterans advocacy group. And she's talking with us tonight about an area of great interest. That's the health effects of veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan who are exposed to open-air burn pits. So if you're interested in calling in with a question or a comment, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Thank you, Lauren. So you were sharing with us about these incinerators, and you had personal familiarity in your stateside assignment, correct, about these incinerators, and then they weren't being used. Is that correct?
Yeah. When I came home, I got assigned a defense logistics agency, and that is what we handled. We handled everything, beans to bullets. But specifically,
right.
I specifically handled those contracts. I know where they were being shipped to. I know that when they got on ground, that ground commanders were, because they were already packing up equipment and cross-loading it over to Afghanistan because we were shutting down bases in Iraq. They're like, don't ship us new equipment. They were just having it forwarded on to Afghanistan. Now, the interesting part of all of this is that's 2010 now, by the time we get everything in there, late 2009, early 2010. Fast forward to September of 2015, the special investigator for Afghan reconstruction goes in and goes through the entire nation, goes to every FOB and combat outpost. And it is the most scathing report of the DOD of how they handled this. They documented every one of them that were not even off their pallets, not hooked up. Or if they were hooked up, the commanders refused to operate them because of operational security. They have lights that are for football stadiums running for the base. But we're not going to burn because they might see the fire. You're lit up like Christmas, but you're not going to burn the trash. So,
incredible.
There was a million excuses, but the special investigator, I mean, color pictures. It was awful. And yet, nothing. Now, the irony of all of this is the DOD and VA consistently to this moment say there is no causal link between these toxins and us dying. There's no causal link. Dr. Emerson, who is the VA's environmental health doctor, he has said it twice to my face in the last 9 months. That there is no causal link, except we have EPA standards here in this country that you can't open air burn a tire. You cannot burn plastic. You cannot burn styrofoam. Even places that do have the ability to burn things are under the strictest guidelines and inspections and have to have filters and all these other things. Because we have discovered through years of empirical research that this stuff will kill people. So every time Dr. Emerson opens his mouth and says, there's no causal link, I see that little kid sitting on the floor with his finger in his ears going, la, 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 I can't hear you. Because this is a man who is a physician. Not just a PhD, he's a physician. He has the nerve to sit there in front of sick veterans and tell a room full of congressional leaders and sick veterans that there's no causal link between burning tires with jet fuel and us getting sick. I want to haul in the director of the EPA and the CDC and WHO. And then in the next breath, they tell us how wonderful the registry is, that everybody's got to get on the registry, except the National Institute of Medicine and Science. They had a whole big long name. That lady sat right next to Dr. Emerson, because in February of 17, they released their congressionally mandated study of the burn pit registry, of its efficacy, of its value, and whether or not any of the data contained in it was going to be useful. Here's the answer. No, none of it's useful. They can't even extract the data out of it. They cannot even extract data to run a mailing list off of it. It's that bad.
Wow. So the VA's entire effort to try to collect data has basically been a wasted effort. And so what's the solution at this point? I know you mentioned the legislation. What can our listeners and others that may be interested in this issue do to help veterans to bring more attention, perhaps in relaying their thoughts to Congress? What do you recommend?
Well, first and foremost is reach out to your congressman or woman. I say this, reach out to your House of Representatives. Senators are great, and we have no issue with the Senate, but they don't handle this stuff. The House is set up to do this. They have constituent services that will help us and that will listen. We even have a form letter that you can send in, and or you can just email them. You can call them. Let them know that, number one, H.R. 6582, they need to co-sponsor it. They need to get on board. This is not a party issue. This is an American issue. We are killing people, wantonly killing people, and then denying that we are doing it. Number two, I need everybody to know something. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. The VA tells everybody to get on that registry. They have approved. That registry's been in existence for 5 years now. Their policy, the environmental training letter, and David, I'll email it to you later if you don't have it already.
Okay.
The environmental training letter is their policy that was issued April 26th of 2010. The first 9 pages of it, very specifically, with EPA standards written into it, discuss how they're supposed to handle rating our claim. And that they are supposed to give us the benefit of a lay person's example. If I say to them, I can't breathe, I spent months not being able to breathe, and now I'm getting sicker, that is enough to open a claim. Yet they have now testified in Congress as recently as June that they have approved in 9 years, just over 2,000 claims for burn pit exposures. There are over
2,000
half a million of us that are sick.
Okay. And as far as experts, you'd mentioned earlier in the show that there were three doctors around the country, some in New York, one at Vanderbilt, I believe. Are there experts that you can steer veterans to, or literature that they've written that might help veterans strengthen their claims on this medical nexus issue, the connection between exposure and their particular illness?
Well, the very first thing is that environmental training letter.
Okay.
Getting their military records, because we all filled out that stupid PDHA, which is the post-deployment health assessment. Get a copy of that. Any medical records that you have documenting your illness, and reaching out to any one of these providers. They all see patients. They all allow self-referral. There are organizations. We have two social media groups. One is Veteran Warriors, and the other one is called Burn Pit Families. Within Burn Pit Families, we have a bunch of organizations that we vetted that help with travel costs and things like this. I know for a fact that Dr. Miller's office has waived exam costs in the past for other veterans. They will help work with insurance. If you don't have insurance, all of us together collectively, we help find resources so that these things can get done.
And Dr. Miller is the one you said was at Vanderbilt. Is that correct?
Yes. Dr. Robert Miller at Vanderbilt Medical Center. There's Dr. Anthony, and his last name is S-Z-I-M-A, at Stony Brook Medical Center in New York, and Dr. Cecile Rose at Jewish National. And I'll tell you, if they're using VA medical care, the biggest thing is get with their primary care provider, make sure all of their, especially the bizarre ailments and weird things going on, make sure they're documented, and ask them for a referral to RISC, that's W-R-I-I-S-C. RISC is the War-Related Injury Something Center. They do evaluations. There are three risks in the country. You have to be referred through your VA provider, but we have gotten a lot of feedback that especially east of the Mississippi, a lot of the VA providers are not doing it. They're fighting the patient on doing it. They can reach out to us. We can help facilitate smoothing that down a little so that the referral goes through. Risk
That's
is
great.
Great
Lauren,
for
let
evaluating.
Me ask you, what's your contact information so that our listeners can actually reach out to you to follow your advice and to perhaps help get these referrals?
They can go to our website, which is veteranwarriorsadvocacy.com. We're on Facebook at Vet Warriors One is our public Facebook page. They can find Burn Pit Families same way. They can go right to our public Facebook page there at Vet Warriors One, and they will. We can steer them to all the different things that they need or just answer questions or help. Our biggest thing is that we have a national network now of just about every kind of provider out there, everything from service dogs to specialists to getting SEER scans done, which are for TBIs. We've established that network, and that's our big thing and our big role helping veterans now.
Great. And your website, one more time, because I know it's a rather long name of your website.
Yeah.
What's the name again?
It's veteranwarriorsadvocacy.com.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And, Rick, before we move on to our next and closing segment, Rick, you may have some questions for Lauren.
No, Lauren, thank you so much for being on our show. You're terrific.
Oh, thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Lauren. Before we go, anything else that maybe I haven't asked you, but would you like to add tonight?
Just so that everyone is aware, there is another piece of legislation out there. I don't want people to get confused. There's two bills, ours, H.R. 6582, and another one, and it's not ours. I don't know the number. The other one's called the Burn Pit Accountability Act. There are four mandates in there, and not one of them actually helps the veteran get care, doesn't help the veteran get rated by the VA, doesn't help them get anything other than an evaluation by the DOD when they get out. That's it. That's all they get out of that. So when you're talking to your legislators, make sure they know that you want that veterans actually get cared for, that veterans are getting cared for and the services and benefits they earned for the illnesses that they've contracted. And the only way that's going to happen is if they sign on with 6582.
And again, the title of that law, correct me if I'm wrong, Lauren, is it's called Protections for Veterans Exposed to Burn Pits. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's the legislation.
Yes, that's
I know
it.
Sometimes as a Congress goes by and there's other co-sponsors, sometimes the bill number there may be another number attached or whatever, but the title of the bill is Protections for Veterans Exposed to Burn Pits. Our listeners may want to make a note of that. So, well, thank you again, Lauren. I hope you'll be back on our show soon and hopefully before your April conference in Washington, D.C. That sounds like a great opportunity, and look forward to learning more about that. So thanks again. Appreciate all you're doing for veterans.
Well, and we appreciate the help and helping us get the word out. I will like to be back when we get everything locked down. I'm going to forward to you a template for any of your listeners that reach out to you that they can send to their Congress member and to support this burn pit legislation. And also I'm going to send you that environmental training report because that is the number one thing to include with their claim, because that's the policy document that says they have to do it.
That's great, Lauren. Thanks so much. We greatly appreciate it. And listeners can always contact me. Our information's on our show website. But thanks again, and we'll talk to you again soon, Lauren.
Great. Thanks again for having me. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Well, that was really good, David. on that note, let me, because we got to go soon here. So
yeah, I know we do.
So speaking of burn pit issue, I would like to remind our audience about the documentary film entitled Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers by film director and producer Greg Lovett. The film deals with the important issue of open burn pits commonly used in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as discussed just by Lauren. and which now are suspected of causing large numbers of veterans to suffer various health problems due to numerous toxic substances which were incinerated in those huge burn pits. I'd recommend anybody who's been listening to the show and listening to Lauren, this film really gives a great pictorial illustration of what goes on with those burn pits. It's really something you have to see. Describing it, telling you about it, doesn't justify exactly what these burn pits are all about. But you can find out more about the film, check it out on Facebook by typing in the word burn pit documentary in the Facebook search engine. You can purchase a DVD. Even better, you can host a showing of the film in your hometown by going through the website TUGG.com. That's T-U-G-G with two G's, TUGG.com. And under the film tabs on that website, look for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. Now, I'd also like to, as we always do, go to our Coaching Into Care discussion. The Coaching Into Care program is a program that helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call. Toll-free number is 1-800-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they do not get the help they need. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Well, thanks very much, Richard. It's about time for us to go this evening. We would like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Lauren Price, who's the founder of the group called Veterans Warriors, who shared her expertise about the issue of toxic contamination from open-air burn pits, which affected thousands of service members in Iraq and Afghanistan. There's a lot on that issue, and we look forward to having her on our show again in the near future. We'd like to also thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, and also Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great work he does for us every week. And we hope that all of you will tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on BBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.